Hey, it's Canzano. I appreciate you making this podcast part of your day. Make sure you subscribe if you want more and leave us some feedback. Away we go.
Initialize sequence.
Welcome to The Baldcast, a production of John Canzano's Bald-Faced Truth. B-F-F-T. From the PAC West Center in downtown Portland, presented by High Caliber Millwrights. In for John Canzano, here's Judah Newby with the Bald-Faced Truth.
You know, not surprised just because of the run we've been on. And I tell you why. It's because what we face in our conference. It's what we face in our conference. I mean, we were concerned about Tennessee's defense. And we said, yep. And the coaches did a great job with their scouting report. Okay, this guy's like Chris Duarte. This guy defends like Parquet. This guy's like McKinley. You know, this guy's like, Cody Riley. I mean, we've got some talented teams in our league. And we're obviously putting everybody on notice. I'm very happy for our program, but I'm extremely happy for the Pac-12 conference. Maybe now we'll get some damn respect.
I love it. Love it. It's Coach Wayne Tinkle after taking down Cade Cunningham in Oklahoma State over the weekend. Took down Rick Barnes on Friday. Took down Okie State on Sunday. And Wayne Tinkle's Beavers picked last in the Pac-12 conference. Got the AQ. Ran the table in Vegas. Three straight wins as an underdog. Two more as an underdog in the NCAA tournament. And they're dancing to face Porter Moser and Loyola Chicago. When you think big moments in Beaver athletics and Beaver history, you think Mike Parker. He's been doing it for a very long time. Hope he does it forever. And Mike Parker joins us live from the greater Indianapolis area right here. Nubian for Canzano on the Bald-Faced Truth. Mike, it is so good to connect with you and to hear your voice again. How are you?
Judah, thanks for having me on. Thank you for framing it that way. I've been blessed to get to call a number of big moments in Oregon State athletics history. But there's something really special about this run in the sense of it coming out of nowhere, seemingly. Now, it didn't for the guys that Wayne Tinkle alludes to. You know, Wayne is, he's been a big believer in the depth and talent of his team for a long time. But from the outside, and this year, even though, you know, I'm really close to the program, I have felt more as an outsider this year, not being able to go to practices, not being able to interview the guys face-to-face, not being able to interview the coaches face-to-face, doing everything remotely. The run has struck me as somewhat out-of-nowhere type of thing, but the Beavers are playing good basketball. And to get to be here in Indianapolis, I'm grateful, first of all, for my bosses who conspired to say, let's bring Parker back to Indy and let him call the games in person after doing all of them remotely, you know, road games this year anyway. This is a run that's bringing back memories of great runs in Omaha with Pat Casey's baseball teams. When you get to a city that's all about the event and you get to stay in the city for a couple of weeks and take it all in, Judah, as you might guess, it's been a heck of a great time so far, and it isn't over.
I love listening to your calls. I love following the photos that you're providing on your Twitter feed as well, kind of giving us the experience living vicariously through that. The bracket is on the walls of the Marriott, and Oregon State is still on it, Mike. I mean, that is so surreal. What's it like to be there?
It's the biggest bracket in the history of brackets in the world, emblazoned on the side of the J.W. Marriott that housed 26 teams at the start of the tournament, including our own Oregon State Beavers. And when the teams advanced, they advanced those teams on that gigantic-sized bracket. I've never seen anything quite like that before. And it's been fun to see the Beavers advance with two wins. You mentioned they've been underdogs all year, picked 12th in the conference, so they've been an underdog all season, and they're an underdog again. I mean, they're the highest seed, save for ORU, which is in the South region in the upper part of our bracket, but the Beavers as a 12 seed, the lowest seed left in terms of taking on 8-seeded Loyola Chicago in the game Saturday. So it is surreal. That's the right word, because watching this team struggle early, you know, losing at home to Wyoming, losing at home to Portland, struggling to beat Portland State, losing by 34 to Arizona, and then finding something, Judah. Special teams find those kinds of things, and they're playing their best ball right now. They found a level of confidence, even borderline swagger at times, about what they think they're capable of, and now they're living it out.
Mike, what can we conclude from that, what you just mentioned, whether it's as fans or as broadcasters or anywhere in between, the fact that this team did struggle significantly in moments in the regular season, and yet it's that same roster, same coaching staff accomplishing what they are currently, presently accomplishing. Do you attribute that more to the bizarreness of the year at large and the season at large with COVID, or is there another conclusion that you kind of take away as someone that is pretty close to the team more than the rest of us?
Yeah, it's a fair question, and I think we're all still trying to come to grips with it. You know, when I mentioned the Omaha runs, to get to Omaha, as the Beavers did six times in the Pat Casey era, you know, you're one of eight teams to survive the gauntlet of college baseball season. And even though the Beavers were, in a sense, underdogs in 06 and barely got in 07 into the tournament, then went crazy in the postseason, taking that great club back to Omaha in 2017, ended up losing two in a row for the only time all year and finished the year 56-6, just short of a national championship. And then essentially amongst the favorites in 18, those were different. I mean, you felt like you belonged there, that you'd had the kind of year all season long in all six of those runs that you knew you belonged in Omaha. As you point out, Judah, I mean, there were times there had to be some self-doubt, I would think. But I think what you attribute to the revival, the ability to get through those early tough times, I think it's Wayne Tinkle's finest hour as a head coach, gathering the team after that 34-point loss to Arizona at Gill and just saying, guys, we can only go up from here, you know, and here's how we're going to do it. And he laid out three different principles that the guys bought into. One is to play harder than your opponent, commit to trying to play harder than your opponent every night out. Number two, please execute the game plan we give you. Don't think that you've got something better, or go rogue and do your own thing and jack a wild three, or go crazy on, you know, on defense and not stay with the principles we've given you. And three, enjoy each other. Enjoy the game. That, to me, might be the biggest one, Judah, when you refer to this crazy COVID year, the incredibly challenging nature of the year for everybody, for student-athletes now specifically, and for Beaver basketball, to have only had seven practices together before the year started because of various protocols and guidelines and injuries and other things. They'd had seven practices together before the season started, and I think it showed early. They were not a cohesive unit. They weren't playing with a great deal of confidence and joy and enjoying the game. But after that 34-point beatdown, Wayne enunciated those principles and asked the guys to commit to them, and they all did. And I think we've seen them, and they're playing unselfishly. They're playing with a lot of fun and energy. The bench, if anybody scores, whether it's Tariq Silver out of nowhere hitting two big buckets to help hold off Oklahoma State, or Roman Silva with career highs in points and rebounds in the last two games, respectively, and no matter who it is, everybody is pulling and cheering for everybody. Any element, tincture of selfishness seems to have vanished. Guys aren't going for their own. They're playing together for one another, following the game plan at both ends of the court, and it's got them into the Sweet 16.
Mike Barker is the voice of the Beavers, and he's joining us now on the BFT. Mike, I have a big smile on my face as I hear you describe it that way, and it's been such a joy to watch, and when I'm driving around listening to your call, and when I'm watching it on TV, like I'm letting out these primal screams when Maurice Kalou hits a step back three or Roman Silva pulls down an offensive rebound and putback. I'm like, some Silver the other night, like you mentioned, I'm like, I don't know who these guys are sometimes, but they are stepping up, Mike. And there's a special joy to the guys that would otherwise be deemed minor characters stepping in with both feet, you know, unencumbered into major roles and embracing the moment and playing with that joy. There's something special about that.
Judah, that's a great way to put it. And it is something, though, again, when it comes to all of us and sort of who are these guys and wow, where did these guys come from and what's happening here? Wayne did say, and I think he's had the pulse of his team from day one, Wayne told me and all of us early at Media Day and elsewhere, and any time I would converse with him about, well, what do you think? What kind of team do you have with a lot of newcomers? He said, well, Park, he said, we've got the deepest team I've ever had. And I didn't know quite what that meant, you know, but now we're seeing it, right? I mean, we're seeing what the depth can mean when you have people in foul trouble or when Gianni Hunt was hurting after getting knocked hard to the floor at Hinkle Fieldhouse, when Zach Reichel was not having a particularly good game against Oklahoma State. Julian Franklin plays. Tariq Silver, again, a guy who his previous career high had been two field goals in mop-up roles and a big loss to Colorado, a 29-point loss to Colorado in Boulder. That was still part of this season, along with a 34-point loss at home. So with Colorado, they lose by 29 to them, and then when they play them in the Pac-12 tournament, they beat them for the championship. I mean, there's just so many odd storylines that could not have been predicted. But the depth of the team has shown up, and Wayne felt all along that he had a lot of guys who could play and play significant roles and make contributions here and there. And we've seen that. For Kalu, what a great story the other night. I thought when he came in, Judah, I don't know if you were following it closely or not at that point, but the Beavers were sputtering. Oklahoma State's defense was long and active. It was 9-4. Cowboys, the Beavers weren't making shots. Enter Kalu against his former team that originally signed him, the coach that recruited him and signed him. Things did not end particularly well there for Maurice. And he goes the JUCO route to Indian Hills and resurfaces at Oregon State. And here he is in a second-round NCAA tournament game, beating his former team with dagger-like threes that helped the Beavers push a lead to as large as 18 in the first half. Kalu is just one of many stories that, you're right, it makes a March Madness kind of run so special, one we really haven't experienced here quite like this in a long, long time. It's just been, you're right, joy is the right word. It's been a joy to watch.
Well, and when I'm at a loss for words sometimes trying to explain, you know, this level of success and what Oregon State is doing, you know me, Mike, part of me is definitely like, man, there's some divine intervention going on here with this team right about now. And hearing Wayne Tinkle in his post-game, he's like, yeah, my sister won. Make sure I gave credit to God, you know, and this is pretty amazing. And lo and behold, now they're playing Sister Jean in Loyola Chicago. So something's got to give, Mike. Yeah. What do you think of the matchup here?
Right, and that's probably the most formidable part of the matchup is Sister Jean herself. Wayne and Jean share a common faith and love of God in a beautiful way, and Sister Jean is just a glorious soul, you know, and beloved in America. When they went to the Final Four 3 years ago, Loyola Chicago captivated the nation, and so did she. And here she is again. You know, she gets her COVID vaccinations at first. Well, you can't go. She, you know, I'm going. They get the vaccinations, and they bring her in, and she's studying film, and her prayers, she's offering prayers to help us get good rebounds and get the ball out in transition, you know, as part of her prayer. So she has a game plan, and she's studied, and she's beautiful, and we love her. But Wayne Tinkle, a man of similar faith and a man with roots at Loyola Chicago, that's a story, Judah, that has come up that I was not aware of. This is my seventh year with Wayne, and I love the man. I respect him. He's done a tremendous job and a much better job than I think some of the critics, you know, that always exist for head coaches and programs, I think have been a little hard on him, unfairly so, because his run, when you think about the post-Ralph Miller era, has been pretty good. Yeah, this year is spectacular, but he's been solid. He's been good. He had one rough year, injury-laden one, but other than that, the Beavers have been competitive and good and won a lot of games. This is his best year, clearly, and the best coaching job he's done, although the first year was pretty special, too, inheriting a roster that no one expected much of, and they went 15-2 at home and were flirting with the NIT late that year. So he's done some great coaching jobs, none better than this. But knowing him and admiring him, I had never heard his story about his Chicago roots growing up. I knew he was from Chicago, and I knew he was a huge Cubs fan, and he let everybody know that in 2016 when the Cubs finally broke through. He seemed to be their biggest fan, although Porter Mosier of Loyola, I'm told, is an even bigger Cubs fan than Tinkle, so we'll see how that plays out. But Wayne, I'd never heard that story before, that his father was dean of students at Loyola Chicago when Wayne was a youngster growing up and would come see his dad on campus and hang out in his dad's office. And then dad would send him to the gym where he'd shoot hoops. And Wayne said, you know, dad would send him to people who would keep him out of trouble. And then on certain days, they would get together afterwards and go to Wrigley Field together. What an idyllic kind of story that is, that I think could even capture Sister Jean's heart a little bit. And she'll offer prayers for Wayne. So we'll see how those things balance out come Saturday.
That's beautiful. Yeah, I did my undergrad out there in the greater Chicagoland area. So when I heard Coach bring that up in his post game the other day, I didn't know that either, Mike. I mean, and that really, it highlights a personal side of this run for Wayne and his family. And I think of Trace. And Trace just missed out, you know, his freshman year with the injury. He missed out last year in his last year because of the pandemic. And now he seems to be the number one fan of his dad's program as they make this unbelievable run. And what do you make of how Trace and the Tinkle family fits into all this?
Yeah, you're right about it. There is an element, I'm sure, a twinge for Trace, a little bittersweet in a sense, because he never got to play in the NCAA tournament, was on a team and was a key player on the Beavers breaking through in 2016, ending that 26-year drought at that point to get back to the tournament. And then last year, Wayne Tinkle believes that the Beavs were ready to make the kind of run they're on now last year. They had just won the game over Utah. They were getting ready to play Oregon. He felt that last year they might have been able to do a similar thing. We'll never know. So for Trace, he's loving it. He joined me at halftime. I don't know if you heard any of that, but he came out at halftime of the broadcast on the Beaver Sports Network when the Beavers were up 44-30 on Oklahoma State, and we were both looking at each other and going, okay, what do we do to get these 20 minutes over with and move into the next round? How do you have to play? And Trace was breaking everything down as a coach would, the son of a coach would, just so proud of his dad and his former teammates. He did say, man, I wish I could have experienced this kind of thing with him, but it's awesome for Trace, his sisters, Ellie and Jocelyn, their mom, Lisa, to be the Beavers' biggest fans, whether at Hinkle or Bankers Life, and it'll be back at Bankers Life Saturday afternoon. They'll get a lot of television time as well they should and deserve. And Trace is loving it. He's not on the team per se, but he still feels like a big part of it.
Mike Barker, voice of the Beavers, joining us on the BFT Radio Network, Nubian for Canzano. Mike, I know there's a few more days remaining before Oregon State tips off with Loyola Chicago. That means there's a good amount of prep time for you. But when you initially consider the matchup between the Ramblers and the Beavers with a spot in the Elite Eight of all things on the line, you know, what are some, you know, factors that you may think be more important than some others? Obviously, Loyola, it's pretty impressive what they've done, knocking off Illinois.
Yeah, and the thing that there's a lot of things, and you're right. I'll use the whole week. I spent part of yesterday, and yesterday was kind of a decompressing. You just, oh my gosh, did we really do this? Yes, and I just spent yesterday kind of taking in the letting the reality hit that the Beavers are in the Sweet 16 and just kind of enjoyed a beautiful day walking around Indianapolis. It was a gorgeous sunny day. Now today some rains have returned here, and so I've been hunkered down a little bit more and going to work on Loyola Chicago, and I feel a little bit like, you know, in the original film Rocky, I think Apollo Creed was maybe having some fun clowning around a little bit while his trainer was watching the Italian Stallion at work in some fight, and the trainer was getting a little nervous watching Rocky prepare in terms of what his guy Apollo was going to be in for. And as I sit down and prepare for Loyola Chicago, I think, okay, these guys are really good. And with due respect to the first two opponents, Tennessee and Oklahoma State, this team is, for me, clearly better as a team. They may not have the elite-level athletes that those rosters had. Cade Cunningham, who's likely the number one pick in the draft, and you could tell at times in that game why he's that highly regarded. Keon Johnson for Tennessee, and the three top 40 draft picks on that Tennessee roster. I mean, they've got, those players had tremendous talent and were well-coached and good teams. But Porter Mosier has worked wonders at Loyola Chicago, and they come in having won 8 straight and 19 of 20. and their margin of victory over opponents in a good league, in the Missouri Valley, considered in some ways a major, depending on certain services define programs as high, mid, low. They're included in the stuff I've been researching as a major, not a mid, a major. But because of their success and the league's success in the Missouri Valley, they outscore teams by nearly 16 points per game. They shoot 50% as a team and hold opponents to 41. They're 37% as a team beyond the line. They out-rebound their opponents by 5 a game. They had 16 assists per game. They defend like crazy, led by Lucas Williams. And all of that to say the reality now of what's next, you know, the euphoria and the glory of getting here, that I think it's a good thing that there's, you know, the team stays the entire week and they can absorb and enjoy and savor what they've done. But these next few days, it'll become very clear to them in film study. And for me, it's only been a matter of seeing them play and take out Illinois, watching some of that, and then getting down to brass tacks, filling out a chart, making as many notes as I can about their personnel and their program history. Judah, this is a really good team and the best team that the Beavers have faced so far in the tournament. No, to me, it's not even close. So they're going to have to play better than they have to advance to the Elite Eight. I think they're capable of it, but they're taking on a very disciplined, defensive-oriented team that, as I mentioned, shoots the ball well and in discipline. So I think it's going to be a very good game, but it's going to take the Beavers' best effort to win it.
Yeah, that's exactly right, and it should be that way. I mean, it's hard to win in the NCAA tournament. It should have.
It's hard to get there.
Absolutely. Absolutely. And I love that Oregon State, they did not do it cheaply. I mean, they are earning everything here, Mike. And that's so satisfying. Last thing for you before I let you go. And I know this is probably a tough question because as a broadcaster, you don't like to necessarily rank your favorite moments in Oregon State history because there's a plethora of them to choose from. But it was cool to hear you parallel this run from the Beaver program in men's hoops to what you experienced with Omaha. And, you know, I could only imagine something similar may be felt if Jonathan Smith and the football team could get to a Rose Bowl or a big New Year's Six like that. But, I mean, how do you kind of contextualize, and is it possible to contextualize just how substantial and how meaningful just getting to the Sweet 16 is for this Oregon State program in the perspective of Beaver Athletics as a whole?
Judah, it's difficult, obviously, to rate anything higher than a national championship. You know, and the Beavers have won three, and I've had the honor of calling those games and those runs, and it's unbelievable. But this, getting to the Sweet 16, settling in here in the great city of Indianapolis, a place I'd never been, a state I'd never been, seeing how the event is promoted and embraced and how it plays out, how they're doing it, to me, a tremendous job. The NCAA has some other issues with the other tournament, and those need to be addressed, and they should be. And you know, that's disappointing in the midst of what should be just a time of celebration for the tournaments that are going on right now, and the Beaver women playing so well on their own part. It's really a great time for all four schools in the state, all in it for the first time in the tournaments. So I'm just enjoying the event and enjoying it from the sense of it reminding me, as I said, of Omaha, getting to a city where everything in Omaha, when you go to the College World Series, anywhere you turn, anywhere you walk, it's all the CWS. It's all the College World Series. It's all the locals are talking about. It's all you see on signs and banners and T-shirts and everywhere, all over the city. And that's exactly how it feels here in Indianapolis. So this run, it certainly approximates the experience in Omaha, the six times that we've been blessed to go as a baseball program. And this has that feel. It has a very special feel. And it also has a kind of feel that, you know, in 17, you were disappointed when you didn't win at all because you thought you had the best team and you should have. And then you do win it in 18. In 13, you had Michael Conforto and company, and you were kind of gut-punched when you didn't win it. Danny Hayes' ball didn't go out of the park in Game 1. And there's the one thing I'll say about this. No matter what happened Saturday, this has been an unbelievable run for Wayne and the Beavers that will leave none of us. I mean, if we lose, we'll be very disappointed. Don't get me wrong. But there won't be anything like, oh, man, we should have, or this should have happened. The game itself might say that later. We'll see how it plays out. But to be here and get to experience this is among the best things I've ever gotten to enjoy in 22 years as the voice of the Beavers. And I'm really blessed that they chose to bring me back here, too. That's not a guarantee, and not all the broadcasters for the teams are here. I'm grateful that Oregon State brought me back to experience it firsthand and in person, and it's been one of the great experiences of my life, and let's just hope it keeps going, Judah. No matter what happens, it's been great, but boy, another game, the Elite Eight would be even greater, right?
Oh, just hearing you say that, Mike, I mean, shiver up my spine. That's so cool. Oh, man. You're so generous with your time, Mike, and it's great to hear your voice. I'll always remember where I was in 2018 when Oregon State didn't win the national championship. I was at Goss Stadium at Coleman Field getting ready to call a West Coast League game, and you were not there. You were calling the game live in Omaha, so I missed seeing you that day, but we postponed our game by, I think, 40 minutes for first pitch just to watch the Beavers finish the job on Arkansas on the Jumbotron and listen to your call. That was pretty special.
Judah, I'm glad, and we shared that. I'm glad you got to. You were right there in the home of the Beavers, watching the Beavers bring home the national title as you were preparing to call a game in your craft. And that's a thank you for sharing that. My question is, being back here, when we were in Omaha for some of those runs, I was getting reports that the city of Portland and other, you know, the state was getting caught up in it. Being out here, and I realize we're all connected via the World Wide Web, and I could listen to shows and things like that at just a punch of a couple of fingers, and I do. But have the Beavers in your sphere, in your world, has the tournament with all four teams in it, is it moving the needle some? I mean, is there a buzz and an excitement back in Portland and in the state that you're sensing that people are getting caught up in this a little bit?
Absolutely. Yeah, I absolutely think so. And I'm a resident of Wilsonville now and have been for about a year since getting married. And in my neighborhood alone, going grocery shopping, I was so encouraged to see all the Beaver gear that people were wearing and all the duck gear. And I go out of my way because, you know, I root for both programs so hard. And I go out of my way to say, hey, go Beavs, or hey, go Ducks, to people walking around. There's big smiles on people's faces. So that's my experience there. I mean, but I will say, you know, they're... It's a different time. This is good news. Yes. It's a good thing, and people need good things right about now, Mike, and I think you can resonate with that. Yeah. So it feels extra special, even if it's not as visible. If it's not immediately visible, I think people still feel it deep down.
Yeah, I think it's a gift that the programs have given to all of us in this amazingly challenging time. To have these games be a real focal point for the fan bases, I think it's a gift to us. And the whole run here for the Beavers has felt like a gift, and it keeps giving. And I've been blessed to be a part of it. And I really appreciate you having me on, Judah.
Blessings to you, sir. We'll look forward to connecting with you down the line.
Thanks. Good talking to you.
Good talking to you. Mike Parker, voice of the Oregon State Beavers, joining us here on the BFT. Awesome stuff. Means a lot to me personally and professionally, of course. And the Beavers are in the Sweet 16. Leave it here. You've got Nubian for Kitzano on the BFT.
We interrupt this broadcast with a special announcement from the Bald Face.
Hey, sorry to interrupt the podcast, but if you want to listen to more of the Bald Face Truth Radio Show, including more of this segment that you're listening to, make sure you subscribe on SoundCloud and iTunes to the Bald Face Truth Radio Show. Thanks for listening.